You're listening to Berkeley Liberation Radio, 104.1 FM, streaming live on the web at berkeleyliberationradio.net, and you're listening to Radio Autonomía Zapatismo in the Bay. We're back here with part two of our live in-studio interview about the relationship between education and anti-systemic, anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist struggles, connecting our Zapatista perspective in big fat quotes of thinking always autonomously, thinking always against and in the interest of transforming the state. And so we're here to talk about two more projects. We heard from folks from The Holdout earlier, and we're going to talk a little bit about some overlapping projects with The Holdout, but specifically some new schools. Schools sometimes spelled with a K, sometimes not. So I want to go ahead and ask you all, we have three compañeros here, to introduce yourselves and maybe tell us a little bit about the projects that you're involved with specifically. So maybe we'll start with Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Lindsay, and I've been working with the Bay Area Public School. It's part of a larger network of free schools, using a website platform where people can propose, anyone can propose a class, and then we have sort of a committee that we're just beginning to set up that will then help to find spaces and schedule classes for people. I'm also working on a mobile library project of my own, hoping to see how that can connect with free schools as well.
Hi, my name's David. I'm also involved with the Bay Area Public School, and we recently did a week from August 6th to 11th to kind of kick off the project called Summer School 2012, which was super successful. And we had a whole range of people participate from the community, including, you know, activists, poets, architects, people with areas of knowledge and really interesting ideas. And it went off very well. So I was really encouraged and moved by that. And we've continued to move forward, trying to plan some new classes. Instead of just a week, more of a rolling, ongoing schedule of stuff, and it's been an amazing thing to be involved in. I haven't been involved in a lot of other free schools in the past, more just informal stuff like info shops and reading groups and so on. So I see this as a really exciting time to just connect with our community and you know, get excited about learning things we all want to learn.
Hey there, this is Autumn, same person who was talking earlier. I'm involved with the East Bay Free School. It's a project that's been around for 3 years in its current incarnation. There have been various East Bay Free Schools in different incarnations over like the last few decades, really. So this most recent one, though, is about 3 years old, and it's free school spelled with a K. And basically, it is a project that seeks to promote and facilitate the sharing of skills and knowledge in a non-hierarchical, non-discriminatory way where everyone has something to teach and everyone has something to learn. So anyone can propose a class. And then because currently it's not actually collectivized due to just lack of capacity of people, it's, I mean, I would love it to be a collective. So anyone out there who wants to make a free school collective, please email the free school. But yeah, right now it's just me. And I get together classes that people propose and put them out in a 2-month calendar that is printed and online. On the website and on Facebook. And yeah, that calendar has classes that are free for all ages, for anyone to go to. And it's all over the East Bay, mostly in like the North Oakland and West Oakland and South Berkeley zones. So, yep, that's about it.
Great. So one of the questions that we wanted to explore today in our conversation here is the question of whether alternative education spaces, alternative learning spaces are conceived of as direct responses to a failing education system, to a failing state-run or privately-run education system, or are they conceived more autonomously in the sense that they are not at all meant to replace the system, but rather to just open alternative spaces, and sort of what the implications of those two kinds of thinking might be. So I don't know who wants to start.
Being somewhat new to the practice of radical pedagogy, I guess you could say, I might not be have the most informed opinion, but I think the two really dovetail with one another. I mean, I think you can't have, or you're not going to have, an autonomous space for alternative education arise if it's not in response to a lack of options there for people. So I see those two being pretty closely related. But I guess in terms of just my feelings about the project, it feels like a very creative project. It doesn't really feel, and this is just me speaking personally, one where we're super interested in, like, tearing down an existing structure that's not working for people. We're more focused on providing options that will work. And that's not to say that there's not a lot of problems with the existing structure, and there are, and we could probably talk quite a lot about that. It's a really positive space, and it's one which you can propose a class or go to classes, interact with everyone there in a way in which you don't feel like you have to have an excessive educational capital, just to be able to participate. It crosses a lot of sociio-cultural age boundaries. Anyone can go. So in that respect, it's something I think is really fresh and definitely a response to the existing institutional infrastructure for education. I mean, no doubt. And it's various problems. But I guess it's my thoughts. So.
I guess the free school was never really conceived as an alternative. It was conceived as a response in itself. So it's a critique by just existing, by creating those spaces. It is being critical without outright having to criticize what's going on. My involvement has to do with the fact that I see learning as a spiritual act. It is ceremony, and it's visceral. So, and it is constant. And when we can detoxify our learning experiences and reclaim our learning experiences, we come a step closer to building a world that we want to see. It means, deconstructing those colonial relationships, those like, I am going to tell you how to be and what you should know in order to, be the right way. A lot of what's embedded in the classes that you'll see in free school is just that. And the classes range in so many ways, from the styles of the people who are facilitating to the content. There are some classes that are very structured as far as they have, there's a set goal for the day as far as what everyone wants to do and things like that. And there are some teachers who definitely come from a model that's much more along the lines of a traditional model, where there's someone with knowledge and they kind of facilitate that sharing of knowledge. And there are others where, it's like, we're going to, sit and talk about compost. And all of those have the goal of creating community and deconstructing the alienation that is caused in a typical school classroom. Schooling is conditioning. It's not, it doesn't pay homage to the fact that learning is a much deeper thing than what schools give it credit for. So,
I would just add to that. I mean, this is something that I've heard Autumn say before, and I've heard other people say, just that public schools aren't failing. They're doing what they were designed to do, and they're doing it really well, which is, alienating people and controlling people. And I work in public schools as a teaching artist, so I go in and teach poetry. And it's been a real struggle to find out how I can, is it possible within a classroom to have a non-hierarchical class, or if I'm working with a classroom teacher, how much can I push against that? And so just having the experience of working with and talking to people who are doing these experiments has been really hopeful for me as someone who wants to engage with learning and really likes working with young people in particular, to see that there can be other options.
Yeah, and that segues really well into another question that we wanted to explore, which is a very personal question for me. You know, I work in the University of California system as an instructor, also as a student, and I'm also, you know, over the last 10 years or so have been involved in various sort of autonomous and alternative education spaces and different kinds of projects, and I always try and think about the ways to connect those two, right? You know, working with an autonomous learning project thus far has not provided me with a way to pay my rent, so I, you know, am a graduate student instructor, and that's the way that I pay my rent, and it's one of the compromises I've made to, you know, be able to do other kinds of things. And so what I try to think about is the ways that the things I learn, the things that I experience, the kinds of tools that I am able to sort of acquire and develop collectively in those sort of other spaces that aren't the university, that aren't sort of the state schools, how I can think about transforming a little bit those more oppressive, more hierarchical, more closed spaces. So I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on sort of what the possibilities or limitations or impossibilities are of connecting these sort of alternative, independent, autonomous spaces with more formal or state education spaces, particularly given that here in California right now, I mean, we all know that the education system, you know, while it may be succeeding in a lot of ways in terms of generating a lot of capital for a lot of evil dudes, you know, that we will never see, it's really not serving the students. It's in crisis. The budget cuts are every time worse. You know, we've seen so many school closures. And there's, you know, a social movement that is emerging around that. So how to link up these kinds of things is the long-winded question. And if it's worth doing.
I think there's a really limited capacity for these kinds of projects to actually interact with these systems, to be quite honest. I mean, I think these projects existing as a critique in themselves and being there for when these systems fail so bad that it makes sense in that way as far as their interaction. At least, I mean, that's kind of how I've seen it. I also think that people are hungry for projects like this, and I think that's why there's been more push behind certain things. Like with the public school emerging, like I think these projects are emerging out of this crisis, but I don't think they can directly confront it. I think they need to be there for when things collapse. And they're also, they also create these communities and these connections that are there also for when things collapse.
I super agree with what you said, Autumn. I'm also wondering too if it's maybe one thing is just making sure that young people in those organizations, in those schools or at college levels know that these things exist. So just with outreach, like I think it'd be so exciting if a bunch of high school kids started coming to like the public school meetings, or my dream would for little kids to come and start talking about why they hate their school, and then I was a little bit involved in the Lakeview occupation, and I came in and taught a poetry class and hung out with the kids a couple times in the people's school, and that was really exciting. That was probably the first time I felt like I was doing something like a free school with young people, with little people, and I don't know what else to say about that. It felt I think the most that it did successfully in my view, and this is speaking out of very little interaction with it, was just raising awareness and bringing attention to the problem. It didn't change the situation in terms of the public schools being opened or anything like that. But, you know, a lot of people met each other through that experience, and a lot of people learned language about and how to talk about these sort of issues. Another thing is with, I'm starting this mobile library in a van, and I'm thinking, what if I take it to my classes and have my students come out and look at it and read the zines and chapbooks and pamphlets that we have there and encourage them to make their own, like, but then I'm also wondering, okay, if I have a bunch of, like, anarchist literature about, like, fuck the police, like, how's that going to go over when the classroom teacher comes in? And so I'm interested in those overlappings, too.
Yeah, I'd be, I don't know, there's a, I mean, there's so many good people, I mean, in the university system, in spite of all of the problems of the system structurally and how it functions in the system of capital. I mean, there's good people there, you know, and I'd be interested, just speaking personally, to know how, you know, these two different models could intersect or maybe help one another. But the key is to not ever have it be recuperated by the system, to not ever have it be co-opted and essentially sublimated by the system. But, you know, everything I imagine that we do as a free school, as the Bay Area Public School, does need resources. It needs space, right? I mean, it needs, and not just people's time, but, you know, it corresponds to capital in some way, unfortunately. So, I mean, to the degree to which we could maybe, you know, take advantage of people that were willing to help in some way that wouldn't intercede in our model, just speaking personally, I would be open to that. But I just don't know how that would really work, or if that has worked in the past, and be interested to hear if it has.
Yeah, I think one of the big challenges with that is the fact that the education, you know, formal education structures, be it K-12 or the university systems, are perceived in or structured in a short-term sense. You know, they're not about building deep, long-lasting, sustainable communities. You know, the university, 4 years, you're in and out, and then it all starts over, which is one of the problems with organizing on college campuses, is that there isn't, you know, there's so much turnover, if we wanted to speak in that kind of language, but there, it's difficult to sort of establish those deep roots, those long-lasting ties. And so, you know, I think that that's kind of one of the limitations there. Whereas these other kind of learning spaces that are based on pre-existing communities, pre-existing social relations, and on a desire to strengthen those, you know, it seems like those have a much longer view in mind. So I'm interested to hear also a little bit about what kind of projects currently or historically influence or inspire the work that you do in these alternative learning spaces, if there are any, just any examples or any reference points for the work that you do.
So, I mean, I can't, like, it wasn't, my involvement with the free school was just inspired by the fact that it existed, and I was like, wow, this is totally new. But, I can speak a little bit, just from studying the historical development of free schools. A lot of it comes from the early 1900s and radical scenes in the early 1900s developing those spaces, in Lower East Side in New York, there was a space developed by like Alexander Berkman and Voltaire de Cleur. They had a lot of skill sharing and workshops that went on there through the modern school. And the modern school actually came out of a movement in Europe, in Spain. And from there, they were quashed pretty quickly and repressed by police. It resurged in the 60s with the student movement, and there was a lot of alternative education spaces built in the 60s. And actually, the East Bay Free School comes directly out of that. I mean, the East Bay Free School has been around, like I said, in several incarnations since the 60s, whether it was through the network of co-ops in Berkeley or through actual, like, university students there, you know, like, taking their education outside. To the point that there are now, like, decal classes and things like that, that, you know, like, have a lot of the same ideas in mind. So that's what free schools come out of. And this project also is influenced by, the freedom schools from the civil rights movement and the idea of they had very horizontalized styles of education as well, building those alternative spaces for adult education. The Highlander schools in Tennessee did a lot of that. The Black Panther Party had an each one teach one model, also very much inspired the kind of models that you see present in these kinds of projects. And you see a lot of projects in Mexico as well that have a very similar kind of model, and it all kind of feeds into these ideas and the punks. Like, honestly, the East Bay Free School is very much influenced by this DIY punk subculture. This idea of, like, you know, we can't afford this education, we can't afford to take these classes, but we need to know welding, we need to know wiring, we need to know Spanish. So how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to teach each other. So, yeah.
I'm pretty new to the, sort of the free school model, but let's see. Like, I grew up in Olympia and was Olympia, Washington, and was exposed to, like, the DIY, like, Riot Girl culture as a kid, and it was a big deal for me, and so I super relate to that too. Some good friends of ours, David Brazil and Sarah Larson, started a language school out of their house, and that's been going on for over a year, and they had just a series of classes starting with dead languages like Sanskrit and Homeric Greek and Latin, and now they have Chinese and German, and they had Spanish for a while and French for a while, and it was very horizontal. They had this model of, like, getting a textbook and just using that as a base, and then everyone, you know, with varying levels of knowledge, kind of collaboratively learning the language. So that was kind of, that sort of turned something on for me. And then once Occupy started here in Oakland, I sort of tapped into the Raheem Brown Free School, and that was really exciting because there were just, like, constant workshops every day and guest speakers. And I was involved with the Occupy Oakland Library too, and it was just, so it just sort of cracked open for me that this was already happening, and this is something that I'd been wanting for a long time. So,
just to also reiterate about the DIY ethic and the punk thing, I couldn't agree more. It's completely in that vein. I mean, just speaking personally, I kind of came up in Los Angeles in the 80s in Venice, you know, making zines and just connecting with people in that giant city who had similar interests as my own, and really putting an effort out to make our own culture. That's just a fundamental part of who I am, and this, I certainly see this project as an extension of that. And I think, several times over the last, I think it's been 15 years, 20 years I've lived here, interacting with the Indie Bay stuff and info shops and places like that where people are self-reporting and contributing to, a sense of what's going on in their community. I also see as an aspect of that, and I've always been really excited to attend those events at Station 40 or at different, or at the Long Hall, in different places around. And then again, with our friends David Brazil and Sarah Larson, I studied quite a bit of philosophy with them, in a very informal reading group setting, and it was totally different than going to Cal, taking a class in Heidegger with, 50 other people, and, just having information kind of downloaded into you. You know, there really wasn't as much opportunity to really, work through the material interactively. That's...
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the differences of thinking about the practice of learning philosophy in the structure of the university versus in this kind of, radical setting. And I think about, the ways that I've learned the best even in the university is when I sit down with my friends after class and we go through line by line a dense theoretical text. And it's like, well, we could have done that on our own to begin with. When I'm thinking about it, like, we make our reading group to get through the class that's not doing that for us, So I think that kind of DIY model really comes to play as sort of a survival strategy within these kind of state institutions as well. You all kind of touched on this already a little bit, but I just want to ask a little bit more explicitly, what are some of the kind of larger politics or larger political projects that you see your work with education and with learning connected to? Projects or spaces that aren't explicitly about education, but that are part of the kind of ethic that you bring into learning.
So here at the Free School, it's definitely about connecting people, creating and sustaining communities, and a do-it-yourself ethic, for sure. It's, you know, like the grand jury panel actually came out of this thing where it's like, wow, a lot of grand jury summons are coming down. Like, and we know Oakland's on the map. Like, how are we going to create those connections? How are we going to be like a fucking wall against the state repression? So it comes out of need. And it comes out of, yeah, like, how are we going to de-alienate ourselves? How are we going to decolonize ourselves in this way where we actually relate to what we're learning and we actually relate to each other in a real way?
One thing that seems like sort of a precursor for the Bay Area Public School Project was something that came out of the poetry community here, which was called the Poetic Labor Project, and it happened 2 Labor Days in a row where people came and talked about the relationship or non-relationship between their work life as laborers and poets and the writing work and versus the money, you know, labor work. And that was sort of in response to the feeling that mostly academics were the people that were sort of getting, having these conferences, and just, you know, you hear about their work in relation to poetry, but this, it was a huge deal for a lot of us recognizing ourselves as workers, as laborers, as people that have to exchange our time that we would, you know, like to be spending on our, you know, learning or on our creative work for money. And, so, I don't know, that was a big connecting point for me. And then Occupy just, you know, hit that to the next, like, 10 steps up level, you know. And so I think just, you know, explicitly being anti-capitalist, anti-authoritarian has been an important thing for me starting working on these projects. I'm also really excited to try to connect with the Biblioteca Popular and see how we can support the work that they're doing. I know people have expressed wanting to do classes there, and you know, we wouldn't want to come in and say like we'll do it for you, but just like what kind of support do you need?
Okay, yeah, it's excellent that you mentioned the Biblioteca Popular Victor Martinez. We are hoping to sort of feature that project on our October show, particularly in this sort of moment of transition that project is in right now after, I think it's coming into its third week since the initial sort of taking of the building on Miller Avenue in East Oakland. And now, you know, as we know, the project has been outside for a few weeks, has been shut out of the space it had outside, has been put partially on wheels, and is sort of taking all different forms. So we'll definitely be plugging in with that. And we encourage folks to check out the segment that we produced from the first day of the Biblioteca Popular on our website. So maybe just to wrap up, we can talk a little bit about the kind of challenges and specifically, you know, the question of outreach efforts always. But challenges and also future desires, sort of like what your hopes and dreams are, to sound a little bit corny, but for these projects, you know, where would you imagine these going? And, you know, expanding not in the sense of growth, but in the sense of, you know, flourishment or something, you know? So yeah, you know, how to sort of think about moving forward.
Well, the Free School's biggest challenge is that it's not seen as sexy work. People want to be in the streets. People want to get recognition and kind of do the really high-profile stuff. And they don't see projects like this as a necessity. And they don't see it as a good use of their time or energy. So, honestly, that is why, like, the Free School is not collectivized right now. Also, you know, just, like, materially, I have the capacity to print 1,000 calendars for a 2-month cycle. In just Oakland, Oakland, there are almost 500,000 people in Oakland, so 1,000 calendars is really a drop in the bucket. And those calendars don't always reach spaces that, you know, like, the people who teach classes and are involved in classes are not always, like, they're already radicalized. They're already part of a radical scene, and it kind of attracts the radical scene, which is fine. But it doesn't really branch out of that, and a lot of it is for those very reasons. So, yeah, those are the two biggest challenges. Oh, yeah, and as far as dreams, I would love to see it collectivized. That is, like, one of the biggest hopes for this project, and also to see a wider diversity on all levels of people involved. So, yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I feel like the outreach problem, we're just sort of starting, so it's hard to tell. Like, even just the makeup of the group so far, I can see what the problems could potentially be, you know, if they aren't addressed. And so, I'm concerned about that. And it's also has the public school has a reputation in other cities as being by grad students for grad students. And so it just trying to be aware of that as a potential. And it's also internet-based, which is, you know, great in some ways, but a lot of people don't have access to the internet. So trying to think about how to connect with people on a more, you know, just face-to-face basis, word of mouth, you know, I don't know, like flyering campaigns, that kind of thing. And it's hard, like you said, it's not sexy work. Like, the education isn't super sexy, but like outreach is even less sexy. And like making flyers and like knocking on people's doors is like really hard. I don't want to do it, but I want to do it. So that's a challenge for sure. And hopes and dreams, like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how big it can get. Like, not necessarily growth-wise, but, like, in terms of depth and just, like, I don't know. Like, there have been these talks about, like, workshops on how to, like, economic workshops for anti-capitalists, like, on how do you do as much as possible for free, and just, like, I want to learn those things, because it would be great if I didn't have to teach in public schools anymore, and I could work with kids, but in a way that I want to be able to work with kids, and, so, I know there's been some talk of, like, trying to start, schools, you know, and just, like, one thing I really want to start is a workshop, Skillshare, study group, working group, whatever, about radical pedagogy and some of the projects that you learned about, because it's really new to me. And Autumn and Giley and Marie hosted this really great workshop at the Holdout, which is where I met the folks from Radio Autonomia, and it was so exciting to feel like this is a serious need. It's not just my poet friends. It's like, it's all over the place. So,
Well, I don't, might be kind of an idealist, but I think education can be super sexy, and I think it's awesome. I mean, this last week that we did from the 6th to the 11th was so super sexy. If you're into education, let's just put it that way. I think the challenges are, I mean, at a functional sort of pragmatic level, is just keeping that energy going and making sure that, you know, logistics doesn't really bog down, and the collectivization, everything doesn't, of decision making, doesn't really bog down that energy, you know. And I'm not sure what the best way forward. I think I could probably learn a ton from you and the free school in terms of maybe what to do, what not to do. I would certainly like to avoid having it devolve into something where it's just a bunch of people kind of worn down in a room listening to someone, you know, kind of drone on about something. You know, that would be, like, terrible. whether it grows or stays the same size, I think if it stays vital and that feeling stays vital, that challenges about outreach will be mitigated somewhat, because I think people will spread that word, you know. And I would like to think that that is maybe like one of the best ways forward. That's just my thoughts.
Well, speaking of outreach, maybe we can end with contact info, websites, physical places also to find information, because I think it's good for us to be able to show up somewhere if we want to.
So the free school is, the website is tiny.cc/EB Free School, S-K-O-O-L. And the email is eastbayfs@gmail.com. You can pick up paper calendars a lot of places in Oakland, but the best place to like definitely find them and to catch a lot of the classes is at the Holdout, which is 2313 San Pablo Avenue at 23rd. Yeah, we're open Saturdays and Sundays, noon to 6, Mondays 3 to 10, and Tuesdays 4 to 7, Thursdays 3 to 6. Okay.
Yeah, so our main website where we just for now are announcing new meetings and stuff like that and posting up some of the content and classes that have happened in the past is bayareapublicschool.tumblr.com. And that's probably the best place to go to get more information in general. Our next meeting is Friday, September 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Neil Proctor Marxist Library, which is at 6501 Telegraph Avenue at Alcatraz, close to Alcatraz. And you can actually come earlier if you want to come at like 6. There's usually, this time there'll be an informal gathering of people just kind of, you know, talking more loosely and freewheeling and stuff. But the official meeting starts at 7, so you should definitely come. It'll be a potluck. It'll be stuff to drink, so it'll be good times.
Yeah, I would just say that it's a super open meeting, and it's a very new project, so if you want to get on the ground floor of something, this would be a good place.
Great. Well, thank you all so much. It's been great to hear about the East Bay Free School, the Holdout, and the Bay Area Public School. We are going to transition now to a segment that our compas produced about a project that Autumn just recently mentioned, which is the kind of learning and sort of community awareness efforts around the grand jury summons that have been coming up around the West Coast. So we're going to hear that segment now. You are listening to Radio Autonomía, Zapatismo in the Bay on Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 and streaming live at berkeleyliberationradio.net.